There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello, welcome to Media Geek, your weekly look at grassroots and independent media and our media environment. I'm Drew Tirico, and I'll be hosting for this week because Paul's out of town. Today we're going to be talking to Zach Miller. He's a founding member of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center and also a founding member of the CU Community Wireless Project, which is a wireless project that is going to bring the internet to the community of Champaign-Urbana wirelessly, and we'll be telling you more about that later. And also, we'll have some Media Geek headline news, so don't go away. And Media Geek Headline News features stories about our communications environment that typically get relegated to the business pages of our newspapers and often don't get reported at all on radio and TV. News on media law, policy, and economics is not just of interest to investors and media insiders. It's important to all of us, especially if we want to have a role in changing our media environment to serve our needs in a more democratic society. Comcast Communications announced its $66 billion takeover bid for Disney 2 days ago on February 11th, which, if accepted, will create America's largest media empire yet, dwarfing Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, even. Disney has not yet publicly responded to the bid outside of a wisecrack from its CEO, Michael Eisner, at a shareholder briefing. When asked about Disney's acquisition strategy, Eisner retorted, quote, "Acquisitions? Oh, we're buying Comcast," end quote. Comcast is a cable television and internet provider with over 21 million subscribers, and with majority stakes in Comcast Spectacor, the owner of the Philadelphia Flyers and 76ers, Comcast Sportsnet, E! Entertainment Television, The Style Network, The Golf Channel, Outdoor Life Network, and G4. Disney's holdings include ABC Broadcast Television Network, cable networks including ESPN and the Disney Channel, 10 theme parks in Orlando, Anaheim, Paris, and Tokyo, with another being built in Hong Kong, Walt Disney Pictures, Miramax Studios, 10 television stations, and a whole bunch of merchandise with grinning mice on it. The Center for Digital Democracy, or CDD, predicts that this new megacorporation will dominate cable systems in 8 of the nation's 10 largest markets, creating a virtual monopoly, besides controlling hundreds of stations affiliated with the ABC network. And while it is within the power of the FCC to declare the deal against the quote-unquote public interest, the CDD's executive director, Jeff Chester, believes the FCC is unlikely to nix the Comcast proposal. Quote, "It should come as no surprise that Comcast CEO Brian Roberts is backing President Bush for re-election and that the company's president, Stephen Burke, is a $100,000 quote-unquote pioneer for Bush-Cheney," end quote. The Post reports that Time Warner is weighing a possible bid for the company to counter Comcast's surprise hostile takeover offer for Disney. Time Warner, the world's biggest media company, was scheduled to hold a conference call with investment bankers to discuss the possibility of making a run at Disney, as was reported in the paper. Comcast has issued a statement praising the potential merger as the creation of, quote, "one of the world's leading entertainment and communications companies with an unparalleled distribution platform and an extraordinary portfolio of content assets," end quote. But Congressman Bernie Sanders, an independent of Vermont, called Comcast's statement, quote, "corporate doublespeak for a new level of monopoly media power." And coming up in a sec, we'll be talking with Zach Miller. Thank you. That was Transmission by good old Joy Division. And so now we're going to be talking about wireless networking, which is a kind of radio transmission, only it deals with a digital domain. Wireless networking has become very pervasive in our community lately, or at least in coffee shops, and you've probably seen people using their laptops, you know, wirelessly, and that has to do with a very sort of localized network. We'll get into that in a little bit. So a new technology has been developed in part by this project at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center called the CU Community Wireless Project. And with us is Zach Miller in the studio to tell us a little bit about what the CU Community Wireless Project is. Hi, Zach. What's up with the project?
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, basically, several years ago, a bunch of us were looking at this new wireless technology that's out there that people use in their homes and in coffee shops and whatever to connect a bunch of computers together. And we were thinking, along with lots of other people around the country have been thinking the same thoughts, what if we use this instead of within a house to connect computer to computer, to use it to connect rooftop to rooftop between several houses? The range on one of these radios is not necessarily that far. You know, you can only get around a house, but the distance between your bottom floor and your top floor is about the same as to your neighbors. So with a good antenna and stuff, you might be able to get, you know, your whole block or something like that. And with a whole bunch of them, you could get your whole neighborhood. And it occurred to us that this is an incredible way to get around the major stumbling block, that whole last mile stumbling block that everybody's been trying to figure out how to deliver media to your home. You know, the phone company and the cable company have spent millions of dollars burying wires in the ground. And mostly they did this in the 80s or before, you know, the cable companies in the 70s and 80s and 60s and the phone company in the 20s and 30s and, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's old wire that was never designed for internet applications. And so they're all struggling with DSL and cable modems and all this stuff. And they're trying to make a profit, of course. So they want to find a way to market it to you and mm-hmm. and overcharge.
What exactly is that last mile problem? You mentioned that kind of in passing. Why don't we highlight that? That's sort of a big term in the internet technology business. What exactly is that?
Sure. The idea of last mile is that basically there's all kinds of technology out there for transferring large amounts of data over the internet between cities, you know, and across mm-hmm. the ocean and, you know, to satellites and stuff, between major installations. You know, the phone company office can talk to the phone company office in Chicago through a really big high bandwidth pipe mm-hmm. Because they can lay special cables for that and things like that. But getting a large amount of bandwidth to your house, that last mile, the mile from the phone company office to where you are with your computers, is really hard, you know, and that's where the end consumers are now. You know, it used to be that the only people that needed bandwidth is this stuff that, you know, it's the size of the pipe, right? It's so uh-huh. if you've got a lot of bandwidth, you can watch video and listen to audio and all this stuff. If you've only got a little bandwidth, maybe all you can do is email and stuff like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can download things and that stores it on your hard drive. But then this idea of bandwidth means that you can get lots of data off the internet or off your network and in a very short period of time. Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's okay. Like the speed of your connection. Mm-hmm. So it used to be that only businesses really needed this, you know, and they already had that hookup. They, mm-hmm. they had a solid hookup through their business grade lines to the phone company. Homes just don't have that infrastructure, and there's so many people now that are desiring of this stuff that the companies that are out there, the phone company and the cable company that have the wires in the ground, they just can't really give you a suitable product. They've made a lot of advances in the last 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, DSL's a heck of a lot better than modems were.
Right.
But it's still not as satisfactory as maybe what you could get if you're a university student here in town in your dorm, you know, or on campus. So okay. So that's the last mile problem, is that mile from the phone company to
gotcha,
your house.
Gotcha.
So anyway, what we thought is, you know, this is a way that we could deliver large amounts of bandwidth to houses without a big investment. You know, we don't have to get right of way from the city and dig up the streets and lay our own cable and, you know, all mm-hmm. of this stuff for the community to own its own network. So the goal of the wireless project is to find off-the-shelf hardware that people can assemble, and if they install some software that we develop, then they can talk to other people who have done the same thing in their neighborhood.
Okay.
Their computers can talk to their neighbor's computers. And if their neighbor happens to be on the internet, then suddenly you're on the internet too if you can do that. And the idea right. is for us to spread out like a web, you know, like an organic growth.
Okay. So you mentioned this off-the-shelf hardware. Now, so the hardware that's really common in, like, the coffee shops now is sort of these, like, very local networks, and you kind of, you mentioned this a little bit before, that these kind of, you know, it'll go from the bottom floor of your house to the top floor of your house. So what are you guys doing? What are you doing with the hardware? How exactly are you putting that together?
Right. The big difference between what you see in a coffee shop for connecting computers and what we're doing for connecting houses is that the stuff at the coffee shops is called a local area network. It's for a local, you know, set of computers that are all going to work together, that are all pretty close together. And the main thing there is that it's a centralized network. Everybody talks, all the computers connect to the central little access point that, and it mediates all the communication. If we're talking about building a network across the whole city,
right,
then it might take multiple jumps for your information to get to where you want it to go. It might have to go through your neighbor's house, and then from there it gets relayed to the next house, and from there to the next house. And there's no kind of off-the-shelf simple hardware that just does this out of the box. Mm-hmm. But what there are is there's cheap computers. And so if you get a general-purpose computer and put a wireless card in it and then program it to do this kind of hopping, then you can make a computer do whatever you want.
So it's not a problem. Did you have to amplify the signal to get it from one place to another? Because I thought that the local networks are very like low signal strength. And do you have to do amplification to get it from these distant points to each other?
We don't do amplification, but we do use high gain antennas. So the main limitation to wireless is it's a line of sight kind of radio transmission. So if there's a wall in between you and the antenna, you're going to have a significant drop-off in the amount of information you can transfer, or whether you can even transfer any information at all.
Mm-hmm.
So by putting these out up on rooftops with nice antennas, the idea is that there's not very many obstructions between the antennas, and so that they can go a little bit further that way. And the antennas add a little bit of range, but we're not running any amplification because what we're trying to do is stay within FCC specs. So these are completely legal. You don't need a license to operate one of these transmitters,
and so we
kind of get under the radar of any kind of special regulations that are going to prevent this from growing.
So you guys are building these sort of mini transmitters, but they're very sort of low power transmitters, and they're going to sort of be transmitting to each other. But this is not quite, you know, typical radio transmission. It's actually, like I said before, it's digital domain stuff, which means like there you can transfer just basically, you know, internet data. You can email from your house to the next house if that's all the network was. Now, what else is included in this network? So you've got house to house, you know, all these jumping points. So if I can connect to my neighbor's house, how are you going to connect then to the internet? How does that work?
Right. So the idea is, the fundamental idea of this is to create a community network to get everybody in a community connected together. And then the power that comes out of that is that you can have lots of different applications shared by members of the community. One of those applications is the internet. So if somebody in the community has an internet connection that they're allowed to share, some internet connections, you know, you're contractually obligated to not share.
Okay.
But some internet connections, you can sign up for one that you're allowed to share with your neighbors. And that's just one of the services that people will be able to share throughout this whole network. And, you know, we can see lots of different ways that people might do this. There might it might be something where, you know, like a WEFT type situation where a group of people bands together to create a nonprofit shared resource. You know, a network, and, you know, everybody pays in a subscriber fee to support a network connection for the community that can be then shared by all the community members. You know, and it's possible to even think of this in terms, again, like WEFT, where some people might have access to that net connection without paying into it. It's supported by those who do pay in, but it's shared by the whole community as a community resource.
I see. So if my neighbor's house has an internet connection to the internet, you know, which is these big pipes running all over the country, then if I connect to my neighbor's house and he has the rights to share that internet connection, then I can share that with him.
Exactly.
So okay, and I can share that high bandwidth connection. So So now we're going to sort of get into the main goal of the project, though. This is sort of the background. So the project was to create this network with what kind of setup in mind? The IMC is sort of going to be the connection to the internet at this point, right? I mean, can you elaborate on that? How that's going to work exactly?
Yeah, right now we actually have two networks kind of growing up in Urbana. These are sort of our initial test proof of concept networks.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is centered around the Independent Media Center at 218 West Main Street, and the IMC has a shareable network connection, and there's about 8 houses now linked off of that share its bandwidth. There's also another network growing up further south. It's actually centered around my house because I also have a shareable network connection. And so there's several houses that are sharing my bandwidth, and right now those are two separate networks, and the hope is that eventually those networks will both grow. The two bubbles will grow so that they'll overlap, and then it'll be one big network that has two shareable internet connections, and it'll provide some redundancy and things like that. So,
okay, so the IMC is sort of one of the bandwidth points, and your house is one of the other ones. So what are you using for the IMC's connection? Is it it's a DSL
right.
modem?
Right now, it's a business class DSL. Mm-hmm. It's ADSL, and it's. It's you know just your standard DSL line, and, mm-hmm. and so in the future we'll probably grow that to something larger as the needs of the community grow.
Okay, because I wanted to get at what are some of the limitations of DSL? I mean, I know that it's got sort of a limited upload rate, which means
right.
like you can download things at a high data rate, but if you want to upload things, it means you want to put things onto the internet. If you want to say like I wanted to email a movie to my friend, I might have to sit by my computer for a while, even with a high bandwidth connection. Right So I mean, is this something that you guys are going to be trying to address with the project?
Yeah, I think what we're actually aiming to do eventually is to get a T1 for the project.
Okay.
Which is a very high bandwidth uplink
upload
and downlink
and
but the other thing to keep in mind about this project is that besides the sharing of internet as one of the applications of the project,
mm-hmm.
The other thing is that all of these, think of the unit of how much bandwidth you get from a DSL connection, even on downlink,
mm-hmm.
is 1,000, kbps, which,
right.
listeners don't have to understand
sure,
what that
sure,
is,
right.
but it's 1,000, right?
Some number.
And but the connection between these houses on this network
mm-hmm.
is 11 million instead of 1,000.
Wow, that's really high.
I'm sorry, it's 11,000 compared mm-hmm. to that 1,000. So it's 11. It's 11 times as fast as a DSL connection. And so from house to house, you have a ton of bandwidth to work with.
I see.
And so the idea is that if you grow this really big, if you get like a few hundred nodes, I mean, right now we're talking, we've only got 6 or 7 nodes. It's just a
mm-hmm.
few houses.
Mm-hmm.
It's a test. But when this thing really grows, for a few $100, somebody can join this network and be on the network and be able to share with their neighbors. And even if they can't connect to the internet, they can share streaming video and audio. And, you could have your own locally
IP.
Relevant radio program. Yeah, you could do telephone type applications. You could call your neighbors over this little network. So part of the idea is to kind of give communities the tools they need to free themselves from the monopoly of the phone company and the cable company, to kind of erase this distinction between the provider and the consumer. Right now, DSL is built around that distinction. That they just assume that at home you're going to be a consumer of media,
mm-hmm.
but not a creator of media. And so they give you the downlink, but they don't give you the uplink. The idea of the community network is that you get just as much downlink and just as much uplink. It's a huge amount. And so there's no difference between a consumer of media and a creator of media. Anybody can be either of those things. So it really is, again, I keep coming back to WEFT. It mm-hmm. reminds me so
mm-hmm.
much of extending the metaphor of a community radio station, of turning community members who would normally
uh-huh.
have to listen to commercial radio into their own content providers.
And what they could do with this is even set up a sort of, to use the WEFT analogy, take it a step further, you could set up your own little WEFT inside your house, couldn't you?
Yes.
mean, because you've got this upload technology. If you have a little bit of software that's going to help you out, you plug your audio connection into a computer and you can broadcast a digital radio station from your house, and you
yeah.
can broadcast to your community and to the internet if you've got the access to,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Anybody could become their own little digital broadcaster.
Interesting. So you mentioned that this is sort, you could use this sort of as a phone and sort of as a as your link to the internet. Now, so this is definitely going to be seen as a threat to the local to the Insight and DSL providers, and to the SBC Ameritech, which is DSL and the phone. Do you think you're going to be getting any resistance from them? I mean, from this project or what?
It's too early to say on that. You know, I think you know, the project is just getting off the ground, and there's a lot of. I think it's important to realize that there's kind of different goals of these two different groups of people. You know, it's going to be very, very hard for businesses. You know, businesses have had a hard time coming up with a profitable way to deliver this last mile solution. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them have kind of turned their backs on it. You know, they haven't really considered it as a major revenue stream. So what we're trying to do on a community level, on a grassroots level, is to solve that problem by not being profit oriented, by being service oriented. I think that there's some very potential strong alliances that could be made between the telecom companies and the community network, in the sense that what they are really good at is delivering large amounts of bandwidth to a single spot, you know, not to everybody in the community, but to one place. So, you know, in the end, you know, maybe some people won't have, you know, maybe there'll be a few less DSL connections and a few less cable connections and a few less phone lines, but there's going to be more T1s and there's going to be more, you know, high bandwidth customers, you know, around town shopping for that high bandwidth solution to provide to the whole community.
See, and then they'll be able to share that within their local network, sort of with their neighbors. You know, if your neighbor wants to buy a T1, he can share it with you. You can share it with the whole block, so that the whole block can sort of distribute the cost of that.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of potential, although it hasn't been explored yet, you know, directly with these companies. I think that once we get off the ground, there's a lot of potential for partnership between them and us.
Cool. So how are you going to structure sort of an organization? I know you there's some talk about on the website that I guess we should probably mention. What is the website for this project?
Website is CUwireless.net.
CUwireless.net. Okay, cool. There's talk there about trying to turn this into sort of a municipal sort of angle, like getting the city involved to pay, have everyone who is interested, I suppose, or maybe even just impose a tax on everyone, but a tax of a few bucks, in order to give this access to the whole community. Do you think that that's going to be...
Yeah, that's certainly one of the most optimal things that could come out of this. We've already had a lot of cooperation with the city. We actually have a node on our test network already at the city building in Urbana.
Oh, cool.
And we've been working with the city on and off through the whole process of creating this grant, and which we haven't even talked about yet.
But, yes, we should.
We did just recently get a large grant.
Let's talk about that now, then. Let's talk about this grant that you've got.
Sure. So the deal with the grant is that... you know, we started working on this project, and we realized that we had done a ton of stuff. I mean, we've built the software distribution that works really well, and, you know, we've got these 8 nodes up, and we've done it all with kind of hand-me-down hardware and stuff. Uh-huh. So we've proven that it can be done for very cheap. But we did hit a point where we realized there were some technical limitations to what we were doing that had solutions, but they were a little bit tricky solutions, and they take a lot of time. And we realized that we just couldn't do this as strictly as volunteers. You know, we couldn't solve all the problems. So we started writing grants so that we could really focus some of our programming efforts, development efforts, on getting this thing to work well. Mm-hmm. And so we applied to the Open Society Institute, which is one of George Soros, who's a billionaire philanthropist, capricious billionaire philanthropist. His organization, the Open Society Institute, works to get these sort of democratically enabling technologies out to communities around the world. And out of over 200 applications that were sent into them, six of them were fully funded, and ours was one of those. So we have received full funding for the next year for four of us to coordinate a project that will be much larger than the four of us over the next year to develop the next generation of this software. This is going to be deployed... we're going to extend the network we're going to add 32 nodes to the Urbana network through this grant. We're going to solve a lot of our technical problems, and we're going to package it all up into something that can be exported around the globe. We're actually going to be deploying 2 to 3 small proof of concept networks in Eastern Europe and Northern Africa, and we're working with a lot of other international funders to look at the future of wireless for other places. You know, here we're lucky that we have any wires in the ground at all. You know, I mean, for all the limitations that our phone network has, at least we have it. There's plenty of places around the world where, you know, this is something they can do, where installing a phone network is something they couldn't do. So,
I see. So you're going to be actually exporting this all over the globe. Is this sort of, so you said this is part of the grant that you got is actually an international component to it. So, and are you getting, how are you doing that? You said you're going to package it up you're going to have to work with the hardware that these communities have too, right? Because you're not getting any extra money for hardware for them, aren't you?
Oh, actually, the grant includes hardware money.
Oh,
so
it does include hardware for these other international communities?
Just for these small test proof of concept networks. And then the idea is that hopefully after this first year, we just have funding for 1 year now, we're going to apply for future grants. And the hope is that, you know, we can pull together the funding to continue to grow this network, you know, to grow this technology around the world. And the cost of entry to these sorts of networks is so much lower than, like I said, than burying wires and things like that, you know, many communities may be able to fund it themselves if the technology is already there and designed for them. You know, if they know that they can just take this instruction manual that we're going to write and implement their own network, then that could be incredibly enabling for them to create an information network with a small amount of money.
Cool. What are you guys working on right now? What's the plan for the next few weeks? You said you just got the grant. You're just trying to get off the ground with this big project. What are you guys doing now?
Right. We're just getting prepared. March 1st is going to be the day we start working full time. All of us have dedicated to taking sabbaticals from our regular day jobs and devote our next year of our lives to really making this thing work well. And so we're all catching up on the background. We're communicating with some of the experts on wireless technologies around the world and brainstorming with them about some of our approaches to solving the technical problems. And we're having a press conference on Monday, and we're talking to folks like you on the radio and just letting everybody know what we're doing, just getting the whole project organized and off the ground. It's all been very, very fast. It's just in the last 3 or 4 weeks that we've known that we are getting the full funding, and we're still working out the exact details of the funding, and so it's all coming together, and then we're just going to rock and roll on March 1st.
Nice. What kind of response have you gotten so far from the community? I mean, you've got a listserv set up for email.
The listserv started with 20 or so people that I knew would be interested in this 3 or 4 years ago, and we have about 150 people on the listserv now, including people from all over the world who found that we're one of the big movers and shakers in the wireless world, and they want to keep track of what we're doing. So.
Wow.
It's and everybody I've talked to about it is extremely excited. Everybody wants to know when they can get a node on their roof. folks,
do you have a waiting list for people to get nodes on their roof?
We do. We don't have a formal waiting list, but we sort of have. We have a map that we've been making of folks we know that are near the network that we can add first. But folks that want to get involved and folks that are interested in that can certainly send email to wireless@cuwireless.net. And get some more information about the project, or just visit the website cuwireless.net.
That brings us to the close of another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news about grassroots and independent media and our media environment. In the meantime, you can catch up with independent media news at the Media Geek website, www.mediageek.org. There you can also download and listen to the archive editions of the program in MP3 in the open-source Ogg Vorbis format. Media Geek is produced live at the studios of Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek's producer is Drew Tirico, and I'm Paul Riesmandel. The Media Geek radio show is free to rebroadcast by non-commercial stations for non-profit purposes. Please contact us for permission to excerpt. Email me at paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.